A great way to support Daily Thunder is by visiting one of our partners, ShopGood. ShopGood has you covered on all Thunder-related clothing items, including original and hand-printed shirts, hats, and stickers for both adults and kids. Be sure to check out our Thunderbird Tee, a popular team redesign concept that pays homage to Oklahoma's Native American culture. To view Daily Thunder's entire catalog at ShopGood, visit shopgoodokc.com/daily-thunder. Thank you for listening to this episode and for supporting Daily Thunder. Welcome back to the Daily Thunder podcast, an NBA podcast in theory only. I am here with managing editor of Daily Thunder, Spencer Davis, and Brandon Rabar, Daily Thunder beat writer. How are you guys?
Much worse now that you reminded me about that article.
We don't have to start there, but we might as well get it out of the way because I figured it would come up. Brandon, what was that?
Oh, it was an awful bit of writing. It was, you know, Summer League is kind of encapsulating the whole knee-jerk reaction to things. You know, all these GMs are doing all these years of research on all these different rookies and players, and here we are one or two games in the Summer League, and you see all these hot takes like this guy is going to be a star, this guy's a bust. I feel like that's what that article was. The Thunder, for their entire existence, has been one of the best teams in the NBA. They were just playing a game seven in the playoffs less than a calendar year ago. They just paid a 23-year-old star $172 million. He's going to be here for the next 6 years. They're loaded with draft picks. They've got a bright future, but they tank for half of a shortened season, and all of a sudden they're a NBA team only in theory. Look, I mean, thankfully the reaction was deserved. Like, if you ever want to see the greatest example of Twitter ratio that you've ever seen, then look up this article.
Case closed. Spencer, do you have anything to add to that? That was great. That made me feel better.
I went on a little bit of a Twitter rant about this. And I don't rant about anything on Twitter. Like, I don't tweet a whole lot. And when I do, it's just like a straight take here or there. This was like the most ridiculous thing I've ever, like, NBA national media for the last, I don't know, however many, at least since Durant left, has ignored the Thunder for like as much as humanly possible, which is fine. Like, I get it, you know, and the Thunder haven't been actual contenders. So at least for sure, since Russ's MVP year, like, the Thunder have kind of been an afterthought. And even when KD, Russ were here, like, nobody really, like, everything was about, you know, how awful the infrastructure in Oklahoma City is. And, oh, I don't like going to finals trips there. Like, it was never anything positive about the city or anything. And now that the Thunder have a plan to try to get back to, you know, or to take a unique path and not to just wallow in the mediocrity of being a perennial number six seed like the Pacers, or even worse, than a 10 or 11 seed like the Kings or the Magic, every single year for the rest of eternity, they're going a little bit out of their own way to try to create something good for themselves. And we've got, I don't even know who this is. I've never heard of this guy. Ben Rohrbach from Yahoo writes this story that is, it upset a lot of people over the weekend. Like Brandon said, it got ratioed to high heaven, but it's ridiculous. The idea that Shea is somehow like unlucky or been, you know, is being mistreated by the Thunder's front office for the strategy. Like, they've taken on two or three contracts, right? Like, they took on, you know, they took on Kemba and waived him so that Kemba could move on and go to the Knicks, whatever. They got two first round picks back for him. Like, it's one contract. And by the way, it's not like they're hitting the luxury tax to do it. Like, they're barely at the floor. Are they even at the floor right now? Like, you know, they bring in Derek Favors, who played 15 minutes a night in Utah last year, and all of a sudden now the Thunder are not getting it, or you know, not getting enough value for these first round picks. Like, Derek Favors is kind of a big name, I guess. Like, he's been relevant in the past. Go look up what he did in Utah last year. like he's a nothing player right now. And it doesn't make any sense that the Thunder would get this much heat for, I mean, this also is not like a completely new strategy. Like the Nets took on Timothy Mozgov and got back D'Angelo Russell a few years ago. Like the idea of adding, you know, bad contracts and getting assets back is not new, right? Like maybe Presti's taking it to the max because he doesn't have any other major contracts in the books. So he has a lot more room to do it. And by the way, I don't think they're done. They're the only team in the league with more than $14 million in cap space left if they decide to use it. And there's no other major free agents. And there haven't been hardly any trades or, you know, any major trades. So, the Thunder aren't done accumulating assets like this. But just to put a bow on this, like the Thunder are doing something just a little bit out of the ordinary here. And they get treated like now all of a sudden, after 35 games of being way worse than they've ever been after a decade of contention, they're suddenly the black sheep of the NBA. It doesn't make any sense. I don't think I can say anything more about it.
Amen. I was going to start by asking you guys if you're excited for football season, but we started there, and I love that. So
now I'm ready to like go on a run or something, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, same. I feel a lot better. Okay, so I guess it was three or four plays into the first summer league game on Sunday. Well, we should point out Giddey opened the game with a dunk that was really well designed, really well executed. Got me very excited. A couple plays later, he leaves for the last time. Kind of a disappointing way to watch that stall. And then same with Mann. He didn't have the greatest first two showings as far as the ball going in the basket, but he showed a lot of what he can do as far as shot creation and the way he can facilitate for others. It was an encouraging two games despite the poor shooting. So to see him leave, I mean, I don't know how else to look at it other than to be disappointed after a year of tanking, which rolled into, well, I should preface or should correct myself, like 30 games of tanking into a very disappointing lottery night, into a draft that we're trying so hard to talk ourselves into.
It's like a B-minus draft, yeah.
And then and then a summer league that it seemed like it was like, well, yeah, we're going to be bad, but just wait till the lottery, wait till the draft, wait till summer league. It's going to be a lot of fun. This is not fun. This sucks, and it's very disappointing. And are there still guys that I'm going to talk myself into? You better believe it. But this is not how I thought this was going to go.
No, I mean, this is borderline disaster on the scale of however much a summer league disaster can be, right? Like Brandon and I, we've talked, like Brandon and I are still optimistic on Trey Mann. Like he has shot very poorly, but he is getting to his spots. He's creating separation. Like once he gets comfortable, the shots are going to fall. He has, I would call it Trey Young-esque wiggle is how I would describe it. Not that he's as good as Trey Young at really anything, but he can get to his spots and he can, get separation. Like he's going to be able to create open looks for himself. And he actually had a pretty good passing night. Like I think as bad as he shot the ball last night against the Pelicans, I believe he was only a -4. And then lost the game by 15, and he played 30-something minutes. Unlike Teo Maladon, who was really bad last night after being really good in the first game against the Pistons. Last night was terrible. I thought after they beat the Pistons, it was like, okay, maybe they actually are going to go on a run here and might go 4-0 or something, because the Pistons summer league team is loaded.
Yeah,
but they got blown out of the gym last night by New Orleans.
It's disappointing from the standpoint you have two first round draft picks. Both of them are exciting. I mean, the Josh Giddey package, 6'9", point guard, best court vision, IQ, passing in the draft. He comes out 9 seconds into his pro debut. He's dunking the ball two-handed. I mean, It was exciting. That was the highlight of Summer League, unfortunately. Right after that, he rolls his ankle. It doesn't have me down at all on Giddy. I'm still excited about Giddy. But Summer League is just all about, you know, excitement for the future and seeing promise and seeing potential. And if you go down the Thunder roster, there were two guys to be really excited about. Because Teo Maledon, we kind of know what we had in him. I mean, yeah, he beefed up. He looks like a Teo Alpha Maledon now. I mean, he is just beefy now. So that's cool. And maybe we'll see some improvement from him this year. But you kind of know what you have in him. And then Jeremiah Robinson Earl, we knew what he was going to be coming in. Solid role player, high floor, limited ceiling, but he can be an impactful player. And he's been exactly that. I mean, his defense, his rotations, his rebounding, his block shots, and then he's just smart offensively. He knows where to be, set screens, just a great role player. Aaron Wiggins has been a nice surprise. He's been, you know, really solid. But, you know, he's picked at number 55 for a reason. So you feel like his ceiling is somewhat limited. Then all the rest of the roster, Charlie Brown Jr., you know, Josh Hall, Jalen Horde. We know what we have with those guys. The two exciting guys were Josh Giddey and Trey Mann. Josh Giddey goes out, and then Trey Mann, like you guys said, look, I'm still really high on Trey Mann as well. The shots are going to fall. That's probably the least of my concerns going into his career was his shooting. He was rated the number one pull-up shooter in the draft by Sam Vecenie, who's a draft expert, does all this research. I mean, the research and the stats and the evidence are there. He's going to be a good shooter. So you want to make sure that his shot creation, being able to create separation at the next level, was going to be there. All those things have been there. And like you guys said, passed the ball, he rebounded well. He's had block shots. He's had steals. He's made an impact. He's just not, you know, dropping shots. That's going to come. So I'm excited about him. So to see him go out after Giddey's already out, going to miss the last two. There's just not much to watch for now with these last two Thunder Summer League games, which is a huge bummer because it's kind of our only taste of the future, which is what the Thunder's all about right now until we hit preseason. So now it's just kind of a lull in what could have been while we see all these other guys, you know, on other teams go off and we had to hear the hype about them, you know. And with the Thunder, you know, with Trey Mann and our rookies, it's like, yeah, it's just summer league. The shots are going to drop. And then, you know, with the other guys, the Sengun's and the Cam Thomases and things like that, we have to be like, yeah, it's just summer league. Yeah, it's just summer league.
I want to go back to the draft if we can. And if you guys are like, I'm not in for this, just tell me. But I want to go back. I agree with you, Brandon. I think Giddey is I don't think him leaving in the so early in the first game changes anything about like how excited we are to watch him play, especially with the starters, like with Shea, with Dort, with Poku. That's unchanged. I do think after seeing some of these guys, and let's take Summer League out of it. Let's not react. But we were really, really high on this draft and the depth of it. Why don't we have more guys? Why don't we have one more guy playing for the Summer League team to get excited about? And I'll name a couple names. And none of them will be Sengun, by the way. Kai Jones looks really, really fun, athletic, capable, ball skills, insane leaper.
Okay, but this is the setting where Kai Jones is going to succeed, right? Like,
sure.
I'm not surprised that Kai Jones is dominating Summer League,
but he is. He easily could not be. He easily could not be.
Sure.
I'll name a guy who hasn't been, because again, I'm not just reacting to a couple games. Another name, Trey Murphy. These are two guys that were just sitting there. Like I saw someone today say the Rockets had 22 and 23, and they left with Sengun, Garuba, and Josh Christopher. Now, obviously, there was a trade that was made, but like that is that's dealing in a draft where those all three of those guys were. Well, let's take Josh Christopher out. Garuba and Sengun were all three in our top 20. It's hard. It's really, really, really hard to square up. It was hard to square up the draft on draft night, and it's even more so now. And I haven't even watched. The only Trey Murphy I've seen is what we saw last night. He wasn't even that good. Like, he was fine.
He hit a floater, though, that I was like, oh. Yeah, like, I didn't realize he was going to be able to get to a floater at 6'9".
Yeah, he's doing more things. When people were saying, like, he's a 3-and-D guy, but he has upside for more things on the offensive end than that, he's already kind of showing me that stuff. And again, like, the smart guys were saying, Virginia doesn't showcase this stuff. Virginia is not the place to go and be, like, a Jason Tatum. If Jason Tatum went to Virginia, like, we might not have seen half of what we saw at Duke. And yet here's Trey Murphy doing a lot of really fun stuff, like week one. So, it's hard for me to square that, like, Presti doesn't evaluate these guys. Like, he's the only one that doesn't evaluate these guys highly. Like, that is very hard for me to believe. So I ask, like, why? Why do they move out of that spot? Why do they only draft a guard with those out of those two picks? How do they come away with just a guard? And again, a guard. You guys know I love Trey Mann, but I think there's a sentiment of, this is a disappointing day because Trey Mann leaves for a reason that we don't know. Obviously, hope everything's fine, but like. It's disappointing, and it brings up past disappointment and highlights it.
Can I play the other side here?
I think this is what I need from you guys.
I think this is as bad as it's going to get. Like, I think we're going to get through summer league, and I'm sure the Rockets are going to play Sengun and Garuba a lot, right? Because they have nobody else to play. But and like, I was higher on Sengun than either of you. And I'm not sure that he is going to be a winning player. And I think that he could have developed into one in a culture like Oklahoma City. And I think that Houston's like, I don't think that Sengun is going to end up burning Presti. Like
and
that.
I do want to be clear. I don't know if I mentioned this, like 100% fine that they did not take Sengun. 100%. I was fine with that on draft night, even more so now, like don't care. It's more about the other guys.
The thing with Trey Murphy, he's older, is he not? I believe he started his career at Rice and then played a couple years at Virginia.
I believe he's the same age as JRE.
Really? JRE? Okay. Well, still, JRE was a second round pick. So, you know, it's a little bit different in terms of I think where you're evaluating guys. And I see why you love Trey Murphy. And I think I texted you guys this, like, he may end up saving the Zion era in New Orleans because that looks like such a home run pick for, like, and is exactly what they need is like a floor spacer and a great, like, is he their best defender right now? And, you know, if Brandon Ingram is being lackadaisical on that end,
yeah, you know, he really may be.
He could end up, I guess, maybe Valanciunas, you would say, even though he's not great for a center either. Like it's tough in New Orleans, but he is a perfect fit. And I love that trade that they made with Memphis even more. But I just think that this is as bad from the Thunder's perspective, especially if Trey Mann is good, like this is as bad as it's going to get, right? Because like we're talking about Sengun and Garuba and, you know, Cam Thomas and Jalen Suggs. Well, Suggs will get talked about, but like all these guys in the teens and 20s that are showing out right now in summer league are going to be getting not a ton of minutes during the regular season, other than I guess the Rockets guys. But even like the Rockets have Christian Wood, so how much are they really going to be able to play Sengun and Garuba? I'm not sure. And they apparently want to win, and you don't win by playing four rookies 25 minutes a night. So I really wonder how much we're going to hear from those guys during the regular season. And I think that you'll look up in April and feel better than you do right now about the Thunder's draft. Not that it's going to be an A-plus home run or anything a year from now, but I think this is probably the bottom of the pit in terms of vibes coming off this draft.
Look, I'm just going to go back to, I really just do think it's just quick reactions to summer league. I mean, like we talk about Cam Thomas, everybody's freaking out about him on social media. I see it. Then you actually look at his numbers. He's shooting really inefficiently. He's just taking a ton of shots to score his points. Not to say he can't be a scorer, but that's what he was known for. He's supposed to be a scorer who played really bad defense. If you watch him, he's playing really bad defense, but he's scoring because he's shooting a lot of shots inefficiently. Şengün, everybody's ready to give him rookie of the year and MVP. Look at his numbers. He's shooting 45.8% from the floor, which for a center isn't all that great. It's fine. And he's shooting 33% from the three-point line. But all anybody sees is the logo shot that he hit. Then he's shooting 65% from the free throw line. I mean, you know, he's putting up raw numbers, but everybody knew he was a great offensive player. The question is, can his length and his defense hold up at the NBA level? We have no idea. He played against Tyler Cook this last game. He's a 6'8" guy. That's who he's going up against as a center. We have no idea what these guys are going to be. And so, you know, we kind of fell in love with these guys in the mid first round because, you know, we do the research and we see guys like Trey Murphy and Şengün and Kai Jones. And we feel like, oh, these guys, you know, got to take one of these guys, all this upside. But there's a reason why all these GMs passed up on Şengün and he fell to 16. There's a reason why Cam Thomas fell all the way down to 27. I think in GM's minds, you know, any guy after 5, any guy after 10, there's like different tiers. And if you look at the draft historically, all these guys in the teens, the chances of them working out and being these great players outside of summer league, very, very low. So I understand the logic of trading one of those for 2 down the line. You know, you can only give so many development minutes right now, and you want to focus on Poku and Giddy and Mann and Maladone and these guys instead of taking it on another project. So if you want to kick it down the line and gives you more trade ammo for later, or, you know, maybe one of those picks become number 12, one of them becomes number 15. So now all of a sudden you got 12 and 15 instead of one chance at 16. And in GM's minds, you know, like I said, all these picks in the teens historically are about the same. So why not 2 chances and one instead of one chance? Then if you want to talk about bigs and centers, next year's draft is absolutely loaded. Like the top 10, 6 of the guys are all bigs. Their centers are power forwards. You know, like 3 of the top 5 guys are centers or power forwards. I think that's where the Thunder are going to get their guy. I think once they realized they couldn't get Evan Mobley, instead of taking a guy like Şengün or Kai Jones, they just decided to punt it and say, hey, let's get an elite guy to be our center, not a project guy with some question marks. Garuba can't play offense. Şengün can't play defense. Kai Jones is a raw project. Let's try to get a Chet Holmgren, or let's try to get a Paolo Banchero, one of those guys instead. So I get the logic. I'm not saying it's right or wrong, or Şengün won't be a star, but I get the logic. I get why it was done. It's just in the moment, seeing, you know, all these guys show out right now, it's kind of hard to focus on that. So I get it.
I agree with a lot of what you just said. Can I push back on one thing?
No.
You mentioned trading 16 for possible trade ammo down the road. It's really hard for me to believe that they're ever going to trade up if they weren't going to trade up in the draft we just had with the ammo that they had going into it.
Well, I mean, they tried to, right? Like, you know, I think they're going to trade him? I mean, I think they did. Everyone seems to say so. Like, I'm not sure that they're ever going to be able to trade him into the top 5. But, no, I don't think that they tried to trade up to 12. Because if they did, I think the Spurs would not have taken Josh Primo at number 12. So, you know, I think they're going to be – like, they traded up for Poku last year. I mean, I think there are going to be other circumstances where the Thunder try to trade up – you know, for sure, they'll try to trade in the top 5, and I think they'll succeed at some point in this later in the lottery.
Do you guys still think they evaluated Suggs or Giddy over Suggs?
I think there's a
chance. I have no idea. We in our chat, we kind of speculated on that between the three of us. I just feel like Giddey was their guy once they couldn't get Mobley or Barnes. But, you know, I have no idea. Suggs would have fell to six. You know, I could very well see Sam Presti taking Suggs over Giddey. But I do think that Presti really, really liked Giddey. And I see why Presti really, really liked Giddey. There's a world where you can very much argue. And I'm a Suggs guy. I had him number three on my – on my big board. I had Giddey floating between six and nine all year. So I'm a Giddey guy and I'm a Suggs guy, but I could see the argument where the upside, the potential, the ceiling to Giddey could actually be higher than Suggs. So I get it.
I'm not one of those people.
I'm not either, but I think the fit with Shea is also potentially better, is better with Giddey. More so the offense that they want to run.
This is just a yes or no. More or less excited. All things are equal. Giddey and Trey Mann and two future firsts, which, if we're being fair, may never convey as firsts.
I don't know that that's fair. You think so?
They may. I'm giving options.
Like 18 overall picks. Something sure. Like that. Yeah.
Let's go Giddey, Mann, two 18 overall picks down the line. Or Book Knight, Murphy, and take your pick of Kai Jones or Garuba.
Well, yeah, I take the Murphy and Book Knight, but you know, I mean, it's hard to say. No wrong
answers. I'm just curious.
I like Book Knight more than Giddey, and I like Murphy and Mann are, you know, one's like Mann is shiftier, but Murphy's probably more of a sure bet to be an NBA contributor long term.
And a big.
Yeah, and I'm with
or
the school
or, brand. Or anyone or Cam Thomas. Take your next favorite guy.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean it's a good point. Like it could have been managed differently. But I'll say this. I think Giddey is going to be on the all rookie team.
Interesting.
He's going to get the minutes too, right?
He seems like he's going to get the minutes for it.
I mean, yeah, it's the top 10 rookies. I think he'll probably be first team all rookie if he has a good year and stays healthy. It's hard to see Scotty Barnes making that. But you know, and so it would be Giddey with the four of the other five would be my guess as to who makes first team all rookie, although it rarely works out that way. Where the, you know, first team all rookie is one of the, you know, the first five or six guys drafted. But I think if Giddey plays 26 minutes a night and as good as we think he is and is healthy all year, I think Thunder fans are going to be happy with how this works out at least a year from now, you know, maybe six, 7 years from now, it's like, oh, Giddey was maybe the wrong pick. But you know, and if it's Book Knight that ends up being the All NBA guy, that's going to hurt because that's who everybody wanted by the time draft night rolled around.
It really is. We had really committed to that.
Look, I really like Book Knight a lot. I really do. But to play devil's advocate, I don't want to come off as an apologist here or anything like that. But because I do like Giddey so much, and I have liked Giddey so much, you know, this isn't just some, you know, recency bias. I feel like it needs to be said, the Warriors, by all accounts, legitimate sources say they were going to take Giddey at number seven. Okay, Warriors are good front office, obviously. The Grizzlies traded from 17 to 10 and gave up their second best player in doing so, and then wanted to trade from 10 to 7, all in an attempt to get Giddey. Meanwhile, James Book Knight fell all the way down to number 11. Both the Warriors and the Grizzlies had chances to take Book Knight and passed. I just feel like when there's three teams considered good front offices at 6, 7, and 10, all wanting to get Giddey and all passing on Book Knight, like there's something there, you know what I'm saying? And a couple summer league games in which Giddey didn't play and Book Knight has been up and down doesn't really change that for me. You know what I'm saying? So that's all.
I think I struggle with Charlotte having a better draft at 11 and then trading for Kai, who was taken 19?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Like having a better draft than a team that had a very unfun year. Let's talk about the years that Charlotte had compared to Oklahoma City. And Oklahoma City had 6-16-18. And it is really hard to not feel lukewarm at best. This was a week for the Thunder as a franchise to sell a bit of hope to the fan base. And it's a really disappointing lost opportunity given that Giddy got hurt and now Mann won't play the final games. I know there's going to be a lot of fans who are like, even the fans that are on board with the process, I'll use that word, the plan to rebuild, even the ones that are as in can be, are like, I know personally a handful that are like, I'm in on what they're doing, won't be watching. Like, they freed up a lot of nights for me in the fall because it's really hard for me to get excited about a bunch of losses and guys that may be okay, might be good. I think this week was a week to get a lot of those fans at least somewhat interested in these young guys. And this isn't to say that they're doing any of this for them, right? I'm just speaking from a fraction of the fan base that might be a bit disappointed. And I think it is healthy to ask questions and evaluate the decisions that were made and not just, well, we turn our brains off and say Presti's the best. And I think Presti's great, obviously. But like, I think it is healthy to at least ask questions about the decisions that they're making going forward.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. To the fans that are questioning, like, oh, am I going to watch, during this fall and winter and spring, like, what if Shea is averaging 29 a game? Like, if you were interested last year, you'll probably be interested next year, is my guess.
And that's totally fair.
Yeah, and especially if Poku's making a leap. Like, and I don't expect all Thunder fans to follow the team on that journey. And I, frankly, I don't think the Thunder do either. I think that they'll be, pretty happy if the Paycom Arena or Pavilion or whatever we're calling it has the Shaycom Arena. I don't know if I'm stealing that. Was that you, Ryan? I don't know who I'm stealing
it
from.
It was. But yeah. I mean, my personal favorite is I love this bar and dome, That's my favorite.
Let's just get Toby Keith involved as much as possible.
I hope he plays every national anthem.
Yeah, it's halftime show. Toby Keith halftime shows every game this year. That'll get fans in the seats. Yeah,
on the roof.
No, I mean, look, this is gonna take a while. Like, I honestly watched more of the Thunder last year than I did probably when they had Russ and Paul George just night to night. Because a lot of the time I wasn't even watching the score. I was just watching Shea and Poku do stuff, and mm-hmm. I had a ton of fun in that. Now, I also recognize that I'm a nerd and that most fans are not going to approach it that way, and that's fine. But, I don't come away from, like, to me, this disappointment with Summer League, and I think I even called it a disaster in the first couple minutes here, which is probably an overreaction. It's confined to the month of August, which doesn't mean much in the NBA calendar. Like, I think we're going to be 5 games into the regular season and be like, oh yeah, remember when Summer League was such a bummer? But it's going to feel like so long ago. I don't think this week is going to end up having much of an impact, for the Thunder. Now, it is a huge bummer. Like, we were looking forward to seeing Giddy and Mann, and for reasons on both cases completely out of the Thunder's control, they're not playing anymore. But I saw what I needed to see from Trey Mann, to be honest. Like, you can look at the stat sheet and say, oh, that's terrible, all you want. Watch the tape. Like, that, the guy is going to be able to get buckets. I'm not worried about his touch. Like, the form is great. I'm 0% worried about Trey Mann, at least compared to my expectations coming in. Like, I'm not guaranteeing that he's going to be a 12-year starter or anything. He may not be, but it's, after seeing Summer League, I'm even more confident, actually, that he's going to turn into something for the Thunder than I was before the draft.
On the flip side, I am so, so, so excited about Jeremiah Robinson Earl. He is he just has such a feel for the game, a really, really smart player. Good things happen when he's around the ball on both ends. I saw a lot of like, he's not like a great athlete, and that's probably true, but like he gets it done at the rim. Like he had a couple really, really nice blocks in the first couple games. And even more like altered shots and shots where he just turned away, the shots that were intended as attempts, but ended up being, you know, kickouts. He did a lot of redirecting guys in the lane. I think he's going to do just fine at center, at least to start. And I really hope we get to see a lot of minutes for him at the five.
Yeah, I got to say, Brandon was right about, you know, he was excited about JRE before summer league started. So yeah, kudos to Brandon. Yeah. I don't know that I'm that high. Like, I think that he's going to be a rotation player for the Thunder this year. But with him and Wiggins, I sort of question, you know, what's the ceiling here, right? Like, they're both probably long-term bench players, which is fine. Like, they're second-round picks. That's completely fine. And if they have, like, seven-year careers as bench players, then they will have so far outpaced their draft slot. It's crazy. But I don't know. Like, there's a lot of JRE hype out there, and I would like to tap the brakes just a little bit, even though he has been very good and he does look like a winning player.
Yeah.
He's basically Kenrich Williams at 6'9". He's like the power forward slash center version of Kenrich Williams. He does all the hustle things. He does all the little things. He's fundamentally sound in everything. He's a decent athlete, not a great athlete. He's just a jack of all trades, a master of none. But if you can get a guy like that at number 32 in the draft, if you can get a 6'9 Kenrich Williams, you do that every time, and that's a slam dunk. I mean, that's great. And hey, I'm just going to throw it out there. He's shooting better from the field and from the 3-point line than Şengün. Just saying. Yeah.
I will say, you know, a lot of Thunder fans have talked about his, you know, I think he shot like 29% from three in Villanova. And I have a friend who's actually a Villanova basketball fan. And a lot of those shots were just like late shot clock. Villanova had pretty bad spacing for what their standards are. Like I'm not worried about him being able to shoot it at like a league average rate, especially for a big. Like I think that's going to work itself out. It's just going to be the athleticism thing, right? Like how long can he hang and how much will that sort of pseudo rim protection translate when it's NBA athletes and not summer league athletes?
But see, that's the thing. We qualify it with the Thunder players, but then when these other guys are doing it against Tyler Cook, they're going to be superstars. That's what I'm just saying. Like, you know, just balance. That's all I'm saying. Like, it's so much like knee-jerk reactions. And to go back to what Ryan was saying, you know, fans who are, you know, getting discouraged and are dropping out on the season already because of, you know, Giddy going out 2 minutes into his game and Trey Mann missing these games and not being excited. I mean, it can be the same type of knee-jerk reaction. One preseason game where Josh Giddey gets a triple-double or Trey Mann scores 25 points. I mean, they're really excited and think they're going to be the greatest thing ever. And those things may not be true as well. I just think that we have to temper, you know, both the good and the bad when it comes to summer league. That's just kind of what I keep going back to.
Brandon, that is a point well taken. I do think this week was a reminder of like just how much patience this whole thing is going to require. And
absolutely,
I think you're right, Spencer. Like this will probably end up being like the low point over the next year, like barring like some injury, like we're going to have a lot, like there will be more things to be excited about, the further we go along, than this week. But like, what a build up to such a letdown, which I mentioned to you guys earlier in the day, like it just felt, I felt similarly after the Mann announcement that I did to the lottery night. Like there were all these possibilities. It seemed hopeful.
Really?
It seemed it's not the same, but like similar, just like let down, like kind of the air was let out of the balloon. And whereas we were excited to, like, all these teams have their guys that they're going to get excited about. And so did we. And it was like, well, just kidding. Ours aren't going to play, actually. And so, like, that was a letdown, but, like, I mean, obviously not even close.
Okay. Yeah. There you go.
I just felt like a sense of disappointment and kind of like womp womp about this week that I didn't expect to feel.
Yeah,
I'm glad you brought up lottery night, though, because this is kind of what it all goes back to. Once the Thunder didn't get a top five pick that they had an over 76% chance of getting, once that didn't happen, you kind of had to improvise. And you kind of, all of a sudden, all these guys are at risk, whether it would have been Giddey or Book Knight or Moses Moody or Kuminga at number six, it would have been a risk. If you can't trade it but to the top five and you don't get a top five pick from the lottery draft, everything's just kind of a guessing game now. And, you know, would that have changed the strategy if they would have got two top five picks, or if they would have got number three, would they have aggressively gone up to get another guy? Possibly. Like, you know, there's a world where the Thunder right now have Evan Mobley and Josh Giddey, or, you know, actually Jalen Suggs was at five. They have Evan Mobley or Jalen Green and Jalen Suggs. But the lottery draft was very, very unkind to the Thunder.
Not helpful, Adam.
Yeah, it was terrible. It was terrible. It's just really, it's really hard to swallow the fact that Rockets social media right now is getting real cocky about their guys and their picks and their rebuild and throwing a lot of fire the Thunder's way, when it's like, man, a coin flip goes the other way. Yeah. And you know, we talk about how, you know, James Harden and Russell Westbrook wanted out of Houston. Daryl Morey wanted out of Houston because it was a toxic culture and their owner was really cheap and making all these bad decisions. Meanwhile, Presti was making all these savvy decisions and the culture was great and people are saying great things about it. And, like, all of a sudden a coin flip goes the other way and all the narratives are reversed and one rebuild's going great, one's awful. It's just, you know,
yeah,
we're talking about a coin flip here.
I want to say, and I think I've said this two or three shows in a row, like, we should not be worried about the Rockets. Like, that situation is going to take care of itself. This is when, like, I would liken them to Texas A&M football. Like, Texas A&M has a top seven recruiting class every year, and then they do nothing. Like, Texas A&M has won half of one division title in 30 years. Like, they haven't done anything. The Rockets haven't done anything since Michael Jordan retired, right? But they talk a lot, and it's talking season right now. Like, we're in the middle of August, okay? And the Rockets, they know they're going to be bad next year. They just drafted four rookies, and they're only veteran. And two veterans of note, like, right, like John Wall and Christian Wood. That's not getting them anywhere but 13th place in the West. Like, the Rockets situation is going to take care of themselves. It does sting that they ended up with my two favorite players in this draft, and Jalen Green and Alperen Sengun. But if you're a Thunder fan, like, I would be more worried about what the Mavericks are going to do building around Luka than what the Rockets are going to be doing. Because the Thunder are going to be competing against Luka here in about, you know, 4, 5, 6 years, and the Rockets are going to be restarting this whole process over again.
Well, just the bad luck, good luck thing that happened, though, it's just kind of mind-blowing, yeah. Especially when they fumbled the James Harden trade so badly that they just fell over backwards into the number two pick and Jalen Green. I mean, the Thunder were kind of methodically trying to get a top five pick here and try to get two top five picks here, and they made all these savvy moves to do so. But then Shea and Horford were so good the first half of the season that it kind of blew that chance, and they were kind of trying to nobly tank the first half of the season, I guess I would say, you know, do it with integrity. And then the Rockets were actually trying to win with, like, Harden and then with John Wall and Oladipo, and they just kind of fell backwards into getting this pick. And so it's just kind of, you know, it's kind of tough times out there for Thunder fans on social media, seeing how it's all gone down. But, you know, I get it. Sengun and Green look really, really good right now. For the Rockets, I get why they're gloating. I understand it. But again, it's summer league and we'll see what happens.
Can we, I need to bring up something that doesn't, we have not talked about enough. Game 72. We just haven't talked about it enough. Like,
are you sure?
Like, in the retrospect, in the looking back at how we got here, that game it gets forgotten a little bit.
I go back to any of the six games that they won without Shea, or seven, however many it was. Like,
sure, yeah.
Like any of them. Like the Clippers out tanked the Thunder on the last day. Bravo, right? Like it's a bummer, but they shouldn't have won so many games in the early part of the year. They shouldn't have beat the Celtics 2 weeks before game 72.
They shouldn't have won the coin flip against the Cavaliers.
Apparently not. Yeah. We were all psyched about that, right?
Yeah, like, we were so pumped about that.
The Thunder would have Evan Mobley right now. Can you, like, the vibes going into lottery night if the Thunder had lost that coin flip would have been horrific.
Here's go ahead.
Oh, no, I was finished.
Here's how bad the Thunder's luck was when it comes to the draft. There were three coin flips the Thunder had. They had a coin flip with their own pick to get a top four pick. It didn't turn out, so they got the number six pick. They had a coin flip with the Houston Rockets to get a top five pick or the 18th pick. That went wrong for them. They lost that coin flip. That's my son. I'm sorry. He's probably got a poop.
What's up, my dude?
Then they had one other coin flip with the Cavs, and they actually won that coin flip. But because of the one coin flip that they won instead of lost, it ended up costing them a top four pick. That's how bad the Thunder's luck was. I'm going to have to help him.
Brandon goes, the thing here, like, you know, we talk about analytics sometimes. I think we're all analytically friendly. I think we can expect some positive regression here. I think that's the positive spin to put on this, right? Like, if the Thunder end up, you know, and they will, and, you know, with at least one, maybe two lottery picks, which we should talk about before the show's over here next year, then, you know, lottery night's going to be interesting again.
Because the two picks you're referring to are obviously their own, and then the Clippers' unprotected pick, given the, and we'll talk about Kawhi, but the Kawhi injury, and then just the unknowns of what that season could be for the Clippers. I mean, we get it either way, no matter where it falls. But that pick could end up being better than most think. Right now, I do want to mention the win total, the league wide win totals that I've seen has Oklahoma City dead last.
In the whole league?
In the whole league is what I've seen. It's Oklahoma City last, and then Orlando right above them with like one more win.
I would take the over on that. And I think the Thunder are going to be bad, but.
And Tankathon Tankathon has them number one right now. So, which obviously that doesn't necessarily mean anything, but.
I would say they have the worst roster in the West right now, but. You know, I also thought they had the worst roster in the West going into last season, and they were 500 at the All-Star break, or almost there. So I don't think they'll end up with the worst record in the league, but I guess they could. That would be fine with me.
Who do you think is for sure going to finish worse? Well, who do you right now would you project worse than them?
I would project the Pistons worse. Maybe the Magic, depending on Jonathan Isaac. I would not feel comfortable projecting any teams worse than the Thunder. Maybe the Rockets, I guess. But I just think that somebody will finish worse. If that makes sense. Like I think the Thunder's culture will be good for four wins too many, basically. I don't think they're going to be. I don't think we're going to look at the All-Star break like we did last year. Like, oh, the Thunder are going to be like ninth of lottery odds. I don't think that's going to be a problem.
Yeah.
But like I mentioned earlier, you know, Shea might average an efficient 29 a game this year, which is occasionally going to be enough to steal a win or two.
And I think we're looking for that top, like, I think we're looking for like top three odds, you know, like just like we were last year. You know, we're looking for that being in that top three.
It's a top three again this year. I mean, it's obviously developing. But, you know, Jalen Duran, Chet Holmgren, and Paolo Banchero are sort of the consensus top three right now. There's a few others like AJ Griffin and Jalen Hardy, I believe is his name. Yeah. Gonna be with the Ignite. There's a few other guys that could end up having awesome years. And remember, like, this class has been underscouted a little bit because of the pandemic. But yeah, it's a lot of bigs. Like, all those, Hardy's a guard and Griffin's a wing. But the other three guys that I mentioned, I think, are probably going to be centers in the NBA.
Yeah.
You know, and Duran is super exciting, and he's young. He's the guy that just reclassified, and he's going to be playing at Memphis for some reason. Shout out to the Bagman at Memphis. I don't know. I wasn't aware that they had a ton of boosters out there, but they got him and Wiseman back to back.
Penny Hardaway is crouton, as they say.
Or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead, Brandon.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think that the Thunder learned their lesson from last season. Shea is really, really good. And if you put any more talent around him, like veteran talent, I'm not talking about young talent, but like an Al Horford or George Hill, they're going to win more games than they want to. So getting rid of Kemba is a byproduct of that, I believe.
Yeah, that's another reason why the Kemba deal was so big, right? Like, not only did the Thunder get two first-round picks for him, and not only does his salary help them reach the floor so that they don't have to go sign another, you know, 26-year-old guy to Spain again to get to the salary floor, but, you know, now they don't have to deal with four extra wins in November, right? Like, the most valuable assets the Thunder have is their own picks.
Yep.
Which is probably more true. Are you cool segueing for Kawhi to Kawhi now?
Please. That's where we're going next.
Probably more true because of what happened tonight with Kawhi signing a 4-year extension. I think this was the worst case scenario for the Thunder. I still think that this could end up working out okay, but what I was really hoping, and I think Thunder fans should have been hoping for him to sign a 1+1. Because if he had done that, then next year he could have signed, you know, before he even played another game, let's say for the Clippers, he could have signed a 5-year max. And so then he's on the books from, let's say, like right now for the next 6 years, if he had done that. Now he's only on the books for the next 4 years. And I believe at lower numbers too. So it's still a long-term deal that could end up being an albatross, but I think it's pretty clearly, you know, the worst case scenario for what the Thunder, you know, could have asked for. I think it's even worse than if Kawhi just left after next year. Because they could have replaced his, you know, they could have replaced him with somebody else another superstar that wants to live in Los Angeles.
I think the only saving grace is that 26, it runs out before their last unprotected pick is owed. That 2026 year. But like you're saying, like it could go a lot of different ways, and it is disappointing. Like, I think Kawhi signing elsewhere would have been like a real like alarm sounding for the Clippers, because it is so tough to recoup assets when you don't have someone like that. You know, even if you think he wants out, like being able to deal him, but like having all of your stuff owed elsewhere is really tough. Like we saw with Brooklyn after the KG Paul Pierce trade, how long it took them to recover from that. So yeah, if you were hoping for that kind of situation, that's probably out the window for Oklahoma City. But, you know, having, like we've talked about, having PG and Kawhi, two guys that, you know, have been injured a lot over the last few years, locked up, you know, taking up the majority of their cap is not the worst thing either.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think if you look at the 23-24 season, they're going to be taking up like $90 million. I'm not sure if that's before or after the next, you know, CBA, TV deal, whatever kicks in, where the cap may go up. But that's a lot of money regardless. I will say I'm looking at this now on SpoTrack, and he does have a play. So this contract, 23-24 is the last guaranteed year. So he's only got three guaranteed years left on this. And there are still, I believe, 3 years of Thunder picks left, or maybe only two.
Yeah, they get the 24. They get the 24 unprotected pick, and then 25 they have an unprotected swap, and then 26 right. they have an they get their pick unprotected.
So when this contract ends, or you know, if he opts out, which I assume he will, going into his age 33 season, there will be 2 years of Thunder picks left, and at that point he could either leave or sign like a 5 year supermax, and still become the albatross that I've been sort of dreaming up, so to speak. We'll see. There's still a lot of different ways that this can play out. I don't think the Clippers are going to be great for the next 5 years. So I think at least one of these picks, whether it's next year or like 2025, 2025 or 2026, something like that, one or two of these picks are going to end up in the lottery, I think. And it's just going to be, you know, and like the 2023 pick, it could end up in the lottery, but it also may not be, you know, better than the Thunder's pick. So, right. you know, right. at that point, it may not matter. I think the idea here is for the Thunder to be better than the Clippers for that 2025 swap.
Yeah.
I think that's the goal.
And it definitely could happen. Like that 4 years ago was the summer that Russ won MVP. Like a lot changes.
Yes.
A lot changes, more than we could ever think about. So yeah, 4 years from now, it's easily, possible that.
Well, and I think that one thing to remember, the Thunder have already won their end of this trade. Now, that's not to say that the Clippers can't also win. You know, Kawhi re-signed and PG is there long term. So if they win a title or a contender over the next few years, I'm sure they'll be happy. But flipping PG for SGA is a win right now at this point for a rebuilding team like the Thunder to kickstart a rebuild with SGA, a top 30 player at 23 years old, is already a win. You've already added Trey Mann now as a part of this trade. So all these trades to me are just kind of gravy, but it's a lot of gravy. It's like a extra helping of gravy that they're getting. And like you guys said, you never know what those picks will become. And already in this first year that the Thunder are getting Clippers picks, Kawhi is going to miss either part of or all of the season. That can make that pick pretty nice. And if PG gets hurt, I mean, it makes it that much nicer. Not saying that I want PG to get hurt or that he's going to get that PG is going to get hurt, but there's a history there. And if anything is even risky with Kawhi being out this year, they're not going to risk it. They'll shut him down. I'm just saying, you don't know, like, you know, both of them are going to be mid 30s by the time these contracts are up and they have a, you know, history of injuries here. Those picks could become nice. They could become all late 20s, or there could be a couple top 10 picks in there. You just never know.
Can we do an exercise here? I'm going to read off the Western Conference standings from last year, and stop me when you get to a team that you think the Clippers next year will be better than. Does that make sense without Kawhi? Yeah. Utah, Phoenix, Denver, Dallas, Portland. Okay, they might be better than Portland. Lakers, Memphis, Golden State, New Orleans, Minnesota.
I think they could be better than New Orleans and Minnesota and Portland. Those three.
They also, I think New Orleans and Minnesota are both going to be a lot better next year. I think that is sort of, you know, if those teams can figure out, particularly Brandon Ingram and Karl Anthony Towns, like if those guys are going to be anything in this league, they need to make the playoffs next year and potentially be better than, you know, a team where Reggie Jackson is just obviously the Clippers' second best player. Like they need to figure it, like Zion and, you know, D'Angelo Russell and Anthony Edwards and, you know, those guys just need to figure it out. And I think it's possible. Now, Portland, that could go any number of directions at this point. Even without those teams, I just read off like nine teams that can end up being better than the Clippers.
Well, and the Wolves looked pretty good once they were all healthy. Once D'Angelo Russell was healthy and Anthony Edwards has had, you know, improved over the first half of the season. Anthony Edwards should be better if Karl Anthony Towns is healthy. Those three guys should be better than the Clippers. And then I'm with you. I think if Ingram, Zion, they figure it out, there's a chance that they improved with the moves that they made this offseason. I know they're getting, you know, a lot of flack for it, but if they stay healthy, they should have improved with the moves they made. The Grizzlies should be a little bit better. The Warriors are definitely going to be better this season. You know, there's a, now Paul George is really, really good. And if he stays healthy, those other guys are decent enough role players between Reggie Jackson, Batum, who's also had a lot of injury history, Morris, you know, there's some solid role players, but the ceiling is definitely capped without Kawhi Leonard. And Reggie Jackson played the series of his life, you know, these playoffs. I guess he had the playoffs of his life. You know, I feel like he's solid, but he's not as good as he showed in those playoffs. I just don't feel like you can say for sure, even the Trailblazers, they're a regular season team, you know, that's fairly even, I guess. I could say it's fairly even. I still like Lillard's supporting cast, if they're healthy, more than Paul George's supporting cast right now. So, I don't know. I think that if the Warriors with Steph Curry, Draymond Green, Andrew Wiggins, and James Wiseman couldn't make the playoffs this past season, then the Clippers without Kawhi are very much a question to make the playoffs this coming season.
Let's so you got Jazz, that's one, Phoenix is two, Denver's three, Dallas is four, Lakers are five, Grizzlies are six, Warriors are seven. Do we agree that all seven of those teams should be better than the Clippers next year?
I have some pause with Memphis.
That's fair. That would be my only question mark, would be Memphis.
But you could slide Portland in there too, like Portland and Memphis, New Orleans and Minnesota, like. You know, I think so. Even if you say the Clippers are better than all those teams, that means their best case scenario is the seventh seed.
Right. I would put them in that tier. I think that's exactly the tier that they should be in. But, you know, if you're just looking at odds, if they're in that tier, let's say they're mid tier, they're out of the playoffs. They, you know, at their best, they'll be the best of those teams, but that's by no means a certainty.
I agree with what you're saying, Spencer. Like, you know, Memphis should be. I think you could make a case that Portland should be in the regular season if they bring their team back with the minor additions they made. I don't even know if you can call them additions, but I think last year's Portland team is better than what they project to be next year. Talking about the Clippers, so.
I think there's going to be some trades, right? Like CJ McCollum and Dame are probably not both going to be on that team, if I had to guess. Like there haven't been any star trades yet. Yeah. Ben Simmons still needs to be dealt. You know, there's plenty more. I think there's going to be more action here. Ty Jerome still needs to be dealt. You know,
Ty Jerome,
Pascal Siakam, Bradley Beal, like these guys are. There's going to be some movement here.
De'Aaron Fox, I've been saying De'Aaron Fox is a sleeper trade guy, and I know he's probably not as good as those other guys, but he's still a notable guy.
I mean, I would rather have Fox than some of those guys just because he's younger. Like Fox for Simmons would be Philly would have to add a bunch of stuff, I think, but
they might hand Morey like the Liberty Bell if he were to do it. Like they would knight him. Like whatever our version of knighting someone is.
If Fox only had like 2 years left on his deal instead of five, I think the chatter would be deafening. But yeah. it's five. Utah needs to make some moves, man. Like Utah needs to trade for somebody, and they apparently have to get under the luxury tax if they haven't already. So
I did think the number that they got Conley at was very good. Like I thought that signing was good for them.
And the Golden State's got like $180 million luxury bill. Apparently, that's not even hyperbole. Like I think it's $178 million. So, I don't know if they need to cut Wiggins or trade Wiggins somewhere. What assets do you want from Golden State? Because the Thunder are the only place that they could dump Wiggins. So what, you know, which I don't know if it's going to happen or not, but like they're not. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that the Warriors are going to find a way out of paying $180 million in luxury tax fees to the league. Would you Thunder are the only team that can help him do it.
Would you take Wiggins to bring in Moody?
Yeah.
I think I would too.
I mean, I think I would ask for Wiseman, but
you would ask for Wiseman before Moody?
Yeah, I think so. I think the ceiling's higher there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like Moody a lot, but I would take Wiseman and his ceiling and his position, the possibilities there over Moody, and I like Moody a lot. I don't know, though. The Warriors really, really want one last go for Steph Curry here. They were willing to pay a serious tax last season in a season without Klay Thompson. I think they're willing to pony up a lot of tax money this season, too. And I don't, as much as they would like to get off that Wiggins contract, he was a really good defensive player and he was solid enough offensively where if they're going to trade him, I think they want a positive asset back. The Thunder can't.
I would send Kenrich Williams back. How about Wiseman?
Yeah, Kenrich, I mean, if the Thunder are going to give up win now players to the Warriors, Kenrich Williams definitely would help Lu Dort. I know he's probably off limits for most fans, but you know, if we're talking about outside of SGA win now players, you're probably looking at Kenrich Williams and Lu Dort that are on really, really valuable deals. I don't know how much the Warriors value Wiggins or not, because Wiggins is still better than those guys as far as their team fit goes. Because they lost Oubre, and they kind of need that wing who can play defense and play solid enough offense. Like you said, Kenrich is a possibility, I guess. You get off that big contract, and you can talk yourself into they're close enough, you know, positive value-wise on the court where you can make that deal.
I completely agree. Like, I think Wiggins – they need Wiggins, but they also need to not pay $180 million in luxury tax bill. I mean, that would be so unprecedented. Wiggins, for the record, has 2 years left on his deal, $31 million this year, $33 million next year. The Thunder could probably flip him pretty easily, I would think, for something, you know, because they could take salary back and maybe get a first-round pick or something. I don't know. Maybe that wouldn't happen until next offseason. But for the Warriors' purposes, I'm just bringing it up because the Thunder are the only team that could take back a salary of that size. And to be clear, there's been no speculation that I've seen about this. I'm just, you know, throwing it out there.
And it seems like the Warriors, I don't know if this is just them, you know, putting it out there with the intent of generating interest, but it seems like they're fine with the guys they took and fine with keeping them as well. And I think there's validity in them doing that.
Yeah, I mean, weren't there rumors that they were trying to trade Moody and future picks for Chris Duarte, who went one pick before them at 13? I think I saw that.
I hadn't heard that, but that's interesting.
Yeah, I think they really wanted Duarte at 14, and the Pacers took him one pick before, and they've offered Moody and other stuff, which the Pacers should just do, but they're the Pacers, which is what the Thunder are trying to avoid, by the way. You know,
absolutely.
Trying to avoid a situation where you take a 23-year-old rookie in the lottery and just to maintain the status quo. That's neither here nor there.
I think that you can absolutely get Wiseman, Kuminga, and Moody from the Warriors, but I think you got to be willing to give up a star. Like, I think that they're shooting for stars to put around Curry, Clay, and Draymond this season for one last go round. And I think if you can't give them a star, they'll just keep their guys.
All right. Anything, Spencer, you got anything else? I feel like we've hit all of my notes coming in. Do you have anything else?
No, I think we covered everything here. I think the Kawhi news is interesting. But you know, it's just too early. You know, it's all speculation. I'll just leave it with this. Like, I think, you know, since we were a little bit pessimistic on this show, I think it's fair to say, and I hope Thunder fans who are planning to watch the team this year, and I hope all of them are able to find a little bit of joy in something other than wins or losses. Because if you're not, like, this is going to be a really long road. Like,
yes,
you're just gonna have to have fun, and, you know, have, let Poku just put a smile on your face for a 15 point loss on a random Thursday night in Portland. Like, that's going to happen a lot this year. And I would say just don't sweat the losses, and just, you know, just as long as there's growth, like, don't just make up things to be excited about if there's nothing there, because that's counterproductive. But, you know, look for things other than just, you know, the wins and losses.
And to be honest, we celebrated the losses last year.
We sure as heck did. And we're going to I'm going to do it again this year.
Absolutely.
I enjoyed one win last year. I'm serious. There's one win that I enjoyed last year, and it was Lou Dort's game winner in the corner. That was the only one. That is the only win that I can even remember from last year, other than the obvious game 72 abomination. Like, I could give two rips about any other win that they had last year, other than, like, the Dort three in the corner and the dogpiling, I believe, against the Spurs in front of absolutely nobody, but they just smiled like they just won a high school state championship and did it. Like, that was the best moment of the year by far, right? And yes, it was a win, and, you know, but it was, you know, it was way better than any of the other ones. It was 10 times better than any other win that they had last year. And every other source of enjoyment that I got out of watching the Thunder last year was from watching Shea and Poker. Yeah. And to maybe a few other players, like Dort took a leap, whatever. Like, Jerome was fun at the end of the year. Kenrich was a solid role guy. Like, but it was pretty much just Shea and Poku just trying stuff. And I had a lot of fun watching that. And I'm very excited to do it again here in a couple months.
Remember game one, Shea's game winner in Orlando?
That's fair. That's another good one. Yeah.
That's the only other one I remember, to be honest. Like, that's the only other win that I remember, like, feeling like it was a really good time. I remember talking to Brandon right after that, and I was like, are we in for more of this or less of this?
Kind of both. The answer was kind of both.
The answer was somewhere in the middle. Somewhere in the middle. Okay, so Oklahoma City plays again tomorrow night at 6 Central. That is against the Warriors. So that is Kuminga and Moody. That'll be a fun watch. And then Saturday at 5 Central against the Pacers. And that will don't you think that'll
not
be
a fun watch? Yeah. I'm sure that'll be it. And that one will not be a fun watch.
But do you think that'll be, you think that'll be it for summer league games for them?
I thought isn't, like, only the two top teams play again and everybody else is done after four. Is that right?
I thought it goes into, like, a more of, like, a, like, I feel like
bracket.
It gets cut in half and everybody goes into a bracket after that.
I have no idea.
We should know more about that than we do. Anyway, we will wrap it there, and we will be back next week to talk the second two summer league games and anything else that happens over the next week. Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining me.
It was a lot of fun, Ryan. Thanks.
Brandon, do we get a goodbye from the little guy?
Little guy's watching Moana right now, so
certainly takes precedent. Certainly takes precedent.
Stuff on mute, so you guys want to hear the Rock singing "You're Welcome" over the goodbyes, but yes, peace out from me and my son as well.
Absolutely. All right, Thunder fans, take care. Thanks for listening to the Daily Thunder podcast.
Hey, Hoopheads, we appreciate you listening to this episode of Daily Thunder. Be sure to check out other NBA pods on the Hoopheads Podcast Network, including Cavalier Central, Nuck If You Buck, 305 Culture, Spanning the Spurs, Hashtag Lakers, Motor City Hoops, X's and O's NBA Breakdown, LA Hoops, The Wizards Hoops Analyst, At the Buzzer, and Lakers Fast Break. There are also coaching-focused podcasts, Thrive with Trevor Huffman, Beyond the Ball, the CoachesMaze.com podcast, Players Court, Bleachers and Boards, The Green Light, and Courtside Culture. Oh, and don't forget the network's flagship, the Hoopheads podcast, hosted by Mike Klinzing and Jason Sunkel, and featuring the best minds in the game from its grassroots to the NBA.